Race Forward, an in-depth look at race relations from voices in our community. A special presentation of Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Connecting now with Gene Gabriel. He is the co-owner of Tasty Soul in Stamford. And Gene, thanks so much for being here this morning. How are you?
Doing well, and you guys?
Doing okay. Thank you so much for asking. So first of all, for anyone who's never been to Tasty Soul, what's the atmosphere like at your restaurant? Tell us about it.
Well, it's a very friendly family atmosphere. It's up spirit, uplifting. So when you walk in here, you get a lot of energy from our staff and from me and my partner. So we like to welcome you guys like a family.
I love that. And how long have you been in business?
Going on 4 years this year.
That is awesome. So how, first of all, for anyone who's never had soul food before, they're missing out. But for anyone who's never heard of it, what is soul food? What are you guys all about?
Soul food is basically a down south origin food, like New Orleans area, Atlanta. So we brought it up here. So more, it's like comfort food. Mm-hmm. It's fried food. It's a lot of sauteed items, vegetables, mac and cheese, yams, greens, black-eyed peas, everything that has a lot of seasoning, good seasoning in the food.
Yeah, and it is so good, and it's so filling, and oh, I just the flavors. I mean, I love soul food. I'm a big fan. So, for anyone who literally hasn't had it, you are missing out. And you know, I want to take the time right now, Gene, to talk about what led up to you opening this business, because I think you have an incredible journey that you really opened my eyes when we were on the phone last week. I think I actually caught myself going, "What? It doesn't make any sense." Tell me about what happened before you even opened this restaurant. What did you go through personally?
Well, I was a troubled youth growing up. So I went through a lot of trials and tribulations in my life. So I got into a kind of trouble. I spent 7 years in jail. But that was my time to regulate on my life to make sure that I came home with a purpose. So I learned how to cook, and I studied from there cooking. So I went to school twice. I went to Lincoln Tech in Hartford and Lincoln Tech in Shelton. The second time I went to school, I went into an Italian program. So I took that Italian program, and I ended up being overseas for 2 years. I learned all the arts down there, and I brought it back up here with the creation of everything else I learned, too. Awesome. But it was a tough journey, but I had to do it because I couldn't be in that lifestyle no more.
So let me understand this. How old were you when you went to jail?
I went to jail at the age of 20. And I came home at the age of 28.
Wow. That's, you know, and I have to be honest with you, Gene, that no matter who you are, doesn't matter what race you are, when you do time and then you come out, it seems like you could really go one of two ways. You could either continue going about with whatever it is that you were mm-hmm. struggling with, or you can rise above it. For yourself, did you find that when you did finally get out and you knew you wanted to go a different route in your life, did everyone support that? Or did you find you had to leave some of your friends or some of the people that, you know, maybe were in your life before to go forward?
The only real people that supported me were the people that understand. Mm-hmm. Those who didn't understand, I left behind because I couldn't be with those type of people because they were trying to pull me back into the struggle. And I couldn't do that because at the end of the day, I had to worry about my family, my parents, putting my parents through a lot of, you know, stress and stuff like that. And I couldn't do that.
Do you find that you were judged because you did time?
Definitely. It's not easy being a felon. You know, it's not easy trying to get a decent job with a record. It's always, okay, we're going to pass on you. Nobody wants to go through a lot of, you know, no's. So it's good to pick up a type of trade to help you move past that, learn something different, learn something that's unique, learn something that you're passionate about. And for me, it was cooking.
Yeah. And I mean, the fact that you went over to Europe and you took on this incredible journey is just amazing. Do you mind, Gene, asking, and it's okay if you don't feel comfortable, do you mind telling us what you did time for?
Well, basically, I was gang affiliated. I sold drugs. I did a lot of, you know, bad things that led up to that. Like, I allowed my peers to take advantage of me and, you know, follow suit and got into a lot of trouble.
I think what is really troubling, Gene, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that things that we've done in our past, I find that people sometimes don't wipe the slate clean, and they let that define you. I can't say I can relate or that I've done time, but I certainly have done things that I'm not proud of. And I have found that there are people in my life who will still define me by those things. And I think it's unfair and I think it's unjust. And, you know, and maybe clarify for me and our audience, do you think it's taken to another level because of the color of your skin?
Definitely taken to another level because of the color of my skin. I feel like we're judged more from our history than what we judge now. So it's a lot that goes on with that. So it's like you have another stigma on top of that being a minority.
Mm-hmm. So how do you rise above it? How do you rise above? I mean, you're a very successful restaurant owner now, and you are with the community all the time, of which if anyone were to know these things about you, they may, like you said, look at you a different way, which is ludicrous. So how do you rise above it? How do you go to work every day?
I go to work with my head up high. Like, nobody can actually take my aura or my energy away from me, because one thing, I have faith. Two things, I would never let nobody do that to me ever again, because I have the power within me to become a better person. Nobody can control that. It's my journey, it's my fate, and only I can control that, and the man upstairs.
Yeah, exactly. What are you finding with the times we're living in right now, Gene? I don't know if you're feeling like this is just another stab at trying to make a difference, and then in a couple months it's going to die down. You know, what are you finding that this time is different, or are you afraid that history will repeat itself, that we're making a lot of noise, we're having these conversations, and then in a couple of months it'll be forgotten?
Hopefully it won't be forgotten, but I can see it slowly dying down, because it's just like, okay, we're here now. Then what? What's next after that? What's next after that? Because, like I said, history repeats itself. We had that back then. How long did that last for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then now we're doing it now. How long would this last for?
Mm-hmm.
It's great that we get all the support now, you know, being a minority business owners, you know, we get all the support and stuff like that. But how long would that last for before it just dies down?
Mm-hmm.
Are we still going to get the same support, or is going to continue moving us forward?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a good question. I feel like time will only tell. And as a local business owner, as a restaurant owner, I would think another big thing that people can do is just literally supporting you. Now, I don't know. I don't know personally what you experience at your restaurant, but would you say that most of your clientele, like, do you have a mix of clientele, or is it mostly of the African-American community that enjoys your food?
No, I do have a various clientele. I get support from all over.
Yeah.
You know, I appreciate that. You know, I get a lot of support. And, you know, we've been successful. We continue to want to be successful. We continue to want to grow, be bigger, move our spot to another spot where, you know, we have access to sit down service, a lot of, you know, to show the people that we're here for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would think, you know, that people can continue also showing, you know, like I find on social media, people are sharing restaurant names or sharing podcasts you can listen to educate yourself. And I think, you know, that, Gene, a big thing that people can do is go to your restaurant and order your food and talk to you guys. And it's okay to be, I don't want to say uncomfortable, because obviously you have a very nice atmosphere at your restaurant, but go outside your comfort zone, maybe. You know, if you're somebody who had never heard of soul food, that's okay. Go check it out. Go try it. That's okay.
You won't be disappointed. Trust me.
No, you won't. I can tell you right now, some of my favorite meals has been soul food. So, it's incredible. And tell me, where are you guys located? Where can people check out your menu, all of that?
So we're located 29 Main Street, Stamford, Connecticut. We're online. We're on Facebook and IG under Soul Tasty. So you can look us up. We're definitely there. We're on the web. We're everywhere, pretty much.
Gene, I think you have a story that is, you know, one for the record books. I think that you are an inspiration. I appreciate you being so open And I hope that you've also served as kind of a platform for other people to feel that they could share their stories and that they won't be judged for them. I don't judge you. I think that you're an incredible person, and I don't even have the guts to make my own sandwich, let alone create my own business. I think you are incredible. So I just want you to know that I see you, I hear you, and I think that you are just a role model for so many people. So I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Connecting now with Vernon Thompson, who's the assistant principal at Harding High School in Bridgeport. Vernon, thanks for being here this morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Vernon, I would love to know from your perspective, first of all, what do you find in Bridgeport? You know, we had on earlier this morning on the show somebody who was a former Bridgeport resident, and he called Bridgeport kind of the melting pot. You know, that's one of the cities where you're going to find the African-American community, you're going to find Latino populations. You know, what do you find with Bridgeport when it comes to racial relations?
I've been in Bridgeport since I was six, and my father was the pastor at the East End Baptist Tabernacle Church in Bridgeport, and he did a lot of work within the community. It is a melting pot, and in the circumstance that we're in now, I have to put myself in the shoes of the students that I serve.
Mm-hmm.
And the communities that I serve, which are very different from the community that I live in, even though I'm still in Bridgeport. And there are communities where there's consistent police presence. And I think when you consistently see the police, it creates a different kind of relationship in terms of with law enforcement, be it positive or negative. It's just like any relationship that you have with friends or any significant other. Sometimes if you're around each other too much, there can be negative things. And in this case, I think there's just there's a heavy presence in areas where there may be more crime, and it becomes difficult. But overall, I think the diversity in Bridgeport is a beautiful thing. We have more Black business and young African Americans that are opening up businesses in terms of restaurants and other businesses. And then we have the East Side, which is a beautiful community of Latino businesses. So all in all, in terms of race relations, I do think Bridgeport is a beautiful place. But yet and still, there needs to be some power shifts among the Black and brown communities in having a little more control and more say in what's happening within our city.
When you have students come up to you or talk to you about something that they have experienced personally, whether that's a comment another student made or maybe they saw something happen to their parents or they experienced something with the police or in the public, how do you address it?
We've done in the past, I was connected with Black Wall Street Bridgeport, and we did series when the Mike Brown situation took place in St. Louis, Missouri. We took time out, and Officer Dave Daniels, former Bridgeport police officer, really gave it to our young people just straight of how it works with officers, just very honest and transparent about the culture, so we could prepare them to respond appropriately when they're in situations. And that was our thing. Our main focus was, and my main focus is as an educator and an African-American man in the community, is how can I keep those that I serve safe? And that's first and foremost. And we really took time, and he really shed a lot of light on police culture and how police respond when certain things happen. And we took that approach just to make sure that our young African-American men in particular took the safest route first to ensure that their lives remain out of danger.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe schools do enough, Vernon, to be able to address that racism exists and how inappropriate it is to judge people by the color of their skin? Do schools address that well enough?
I think we're getting there. And at the high school level, there's a lot to address in a little amount of time. And there's a lot that has to be done. I think at this point, what's going on currently, where my mind has been is how can we prepare the next generation of leaders that can kind of tackle the systematic change that are pressing towards the community in terms of the police relations and the current things that are happening. I happen to be the administrator over the Law Academy. Harding has a Law Academy, and local attorneys have agreed to come in this year and work with students, not only local attorneys, but community advocates who are currently advocating for prisoners and in situations like this who are organizers, so that we can create the voices that really can work on making those changes. And it's twofold in terms of how, as a community, we can work on getting past that. We still have to keep our minds set on what can we do to strengthen the community. So I think while we must educate on race, and I think, you know, it's something, times like these show the need to continue to increase. Bridgeport was actually a front runner in implementing Latino studies and African American history into the curriculum. So they were front runners there. But I think things happen so rapidly that we have to look at, you know, what we're teaching, how we're teaching it, and continue to advance. But I think there have been some steps made, and the steps definitely have to continue.
Well, Vernon Thompson, we really appreciate your insight this morning. Thank you for the work that you're doing in Bridgeport at Harding High School. That's the assistant principal there at Harding High School. Thank you. I appreciate it.
And can I give one shout out to our administrative staff, Dave Brown, Kathy Silver, and Mr. Corcoran, but most importantly to our 2020 graduates. You guys have endured a serious storm in terms of what's happening now with the coronavirus and the police brutality. You guys have made it through tremendous challenges and stress to reach success. So thank you guys.
I love that. And yeah, congratulations to that class. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Vernon. Again, I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Talking now with Alicia Robinson, who is the arts director for Bridgeport Public Schools. Thank you so much for being here this morning. How are you?
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. I'm doing great.
So talk to us a little bit about, first of all, what you do.
Yeah, so I am the arts director, as you said, for Bridgeport Public Schools. So my primary responsibility is to oversee all of the art and music programming for Bridgeport Public Schools. And so that includes supervising, writing curriculum, doing observations, and really making sure that our students have the access and opportunities that they deserve as it pertains to the arts.
What is the importance of having arts in especially young minds, and sort of just in the growing years before you become an adult, being able to have the access that you're talking about to art, music, and self-expression?
Right. And so that self-expression piece is really a big part of it. I think that we, you know, live in a world where a lot of times we're keeping the voices of our children silenced. And the arts is a means for artistic expression for students who have thoughts, who have ideas, who may not have the vocabulary to convey them, or the research and the background knowledge to convey what those thoughts are and why different things happening in the world get to them. But they have that artistic ability to be able to express themselves. So expressing themselves in ways that give them a voice without having to use their words.
So do you have a curriculum, Alicia, that is, you know, tied to making sure that kids feel comfortable saying how they're feeling and asking questions and being curious? Would you say that that's something that you're very much for, and the curriculum kind of mirrors that?
Absolutely. One of the beauties about the curriculum that we do have is we model the National Core Art Standards and we implement that. And so, as we know in education, it's not a cookie cutter field. And so every teacher has their own unique set of experiences that they bring into the classroom. And so one of the incredible things about the arts, much like how our students learn, is that each teacher is able to teach to the standards in their own unique way. So what is happening at one school may not be happening the exact same way in the other school. However, those content standards are still what's being strived for. And so with those content standards, absolutely creativity, voice, expression, exploration of self, investigating how the arts and the real world are intersectional and related. So really the bounds are limitless because each teacher gets to bring in their own experiences and use those to push forward with student learning in the classroom.
Speaking this morning with Alicia Robinson, who is the arts director for Bridgeport Public Schools. And has there ever been either a project or a time or, you know, in the time that you have worked this role, has there been a moment where a student shocked you or a student made something and you thought, wow, we need to address this or we need to talk about this? Has there ever been any standout moments like that?
That is a great question. I can't think of there's definitely some standout moments, mm-hmm. but not because something has shocked me, right? Because within the arts, everything is subjective. And so it's important that as we're teaching the arts, whether it's visual arts or performing arts, you know, that we're looking at a variety of artists. Some of them absolutely are controversial. Some of them are not looking at famous artists and performing artists and how their vision came to be. And then the hope is that, you know, you inspire and instill that in students. And so when you see a creative piece of work, it's not really shocking, right? It's a beautiful thing because it's their interpretation of, you know, how they perceive the world around them. Mm-hmm. There actually was recently a student, a high school student who did a piece, and I shared this on our BPS Facebook arts page. The prompt from their teacher was to create a jingle or a commercial, and this student, really just trying to make sense of everything in the world, created a jingle for, how people should mind their business, right?
Oh, I love
And specifically started it with, dear white people, you know, are you bothered when black people are at the park cooking out, you know, and doing their thing or, walking their dogs in the park? Like, are you bothered by that? Well, we have something for you. It's called Mind Your Business. Try it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by no means were the parameters set that they had to address what the context of the current social issues are. But that's what she had to do, right? She had to get it out. We have incredible, incredible Black Lives Matter art pieces that students are creating. And literally from, you know, as young as elementary school and second grade all the way up through high school. And so I think it's so important that students have and their artistic expression is cultivated and nurtured and celebrated so that we can understand how they're feeling and how they're making sense of the world, even when they don't have the language to convey it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, in your professional opinion, how do you also make sure that everyone feels their voice matters? And the reason I say that is because I do find, especially with what we are living in right now, or we have been living in this, but it's being addressed and it's on the front page of every paper right now, is racial differences. And I do find that I think people right now especially are trying to ask questions, they're trying to have those conversations, they're trying to discuss these things. But I have to be honest, I worry, Alicia, that there's going to be people I'll say even, you know, white people who are scared that they're walking on eggshells. They're not sure what the right thing is to say or how to address it. Or maybe there's a moment where they feel, okay, I'm going to open up and I'm going to talk about these things, but they get attacked and kind of thrown in with people who are ignorant when that's not really fair either. So how do you balance that? How do you balance that? We have some very strong issues you know, I would say across the board. I mean, certainly it seems like, you know, the Black community is dealing with a deep-rooted issue that has been there for way too long. It should have never existed. But how do you balance that you've got a lot of different students in Bridgeport with different feelings?
Yeah, so really great question. And I look at it in two different ways. So as an adult, how, you know, I would kind of handle it is a little bit different than how I would with students.
Sure.
So between adults, it's really up to adults to self-educate, right? And, you know, there's plenty of books and webinars and workshops and resources that are available to anyone that has the desire to learn more. And if you really want to learn more and you really want to be better and you really want to understand, then you have to put the time in to self-educate, right? We don't grow up in schools where we're being taught anti-racism, right? That's not what is being taught in school.
Yeah.
That's not how I grew up. So all of the information that we have because of our cultural experiences, you know, we shouldn't be expected to be the experts in all things Black culture. And so I understand when some people get annoyed when others are asking, you know, because we've had to do the work, right? We've lived experiences, but then we've also had to do the self education on top of what we've been taught in schools to make sure that we were informed and, you know, knew our history, right? Because again, that's not what's being taught in schools.
Right.
And so that's not something I can teach to you. A lifetime of a quest for knowledge and lived experiences is not something I can teach you in a 10-minute, 15-minute conversation.
Right.
And honestly, I'm still learning as an adult, right? So I have books, audio books, imprint books that I'm reading to make sure that I'm knowledgeable so that I can do the work for self. And so that's where it starts, right? It definitely starts with self. As it pertains to students within education, I think it's essential that you understand that privilege is real and that it exists, and whether or not, you know, you personally benefited depending on what your cultural background is, but be open to having conversations. It's really as simple as that, because I think students are so much more, when you have those relationships built with them, there's so much more understanding, there's so much more forgiving, there's so much more willing to engage in honest dialogue, and that presents an opportunity for teachers to learn from students, particularly when they're not front, when they don't look like the students that they're teaching. And so in this district and in districts across the country, it's so important that when you make a conscious decision as a white person to work in communities that primarily serve Black and brown students, that you are willing to listen to them and engage in discussion and dialogue, even if you don't have all of the answers, but just listen. And there's so much that you learn just through that cultural exchange that is going to forever change you.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think you hit the nail on the head there. Alicia Robinson, the arts director for Bridgeport Public Schools, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about this. I really appreciate it, and getting your insight out there to our audience. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me. Best of luck to you.
Absolutely. Dr. Yvonne Francis is here now, an educator for more than 20 years. Dr. Francis, thanks for being here this morning. How are you?
Good. Great. Thank you for having me this morning.
Absolutely. So first of all, talk to us a little bit about what you do.
I am currently a teacher for Hartford Public Schools. I'm also a certified administrator, so I've worked in administration and teaching. And right now, I'm in teaching, and I'm in elementary school.
Now, do you find that there's enough being done to address race? You know, I know that we have Black History Month. Even when I was a kid, I always felt like that wasn't really enough. And I don't even know if they took advantage of that month enough to teach us. But do you find that enough is being done as an educator in the curriculum of Connecticut schools? I know you can only speak to Hartford, but what are you finding in Hartford?
I don't feel like there is enough being done in Hartford or actually, you know, anywhere, because there's a lot of rich history that a lot of just, it's not being taught in the schools. I'm going to just give you an example. Myself and my husband went to Washington to Thurgood Marshall's gravesite. And I also, on the side, I take pictures. I'm a photographer. So there was a tour group next to us with some kids. And the teacher was asking the, you know, the students, like, you know, who was Thurgood Marshall? And I'm just like, oh, my gosh. They don't know the Supreme Court, the justice, the Brown versus Board of Education.
Wow.
And finally, I said it out loud. I'm like, you know what? I'm like, you know, Plessy versus Ferguson. I'm saying it.
Right.
So the teacher's like, okay, somebody here knows their history. So, you know, I bring all that back to my students and to the classroom so that they learn the history and the struggles of African Americans. They have to learn it and know so then they can deal with it. And that's black and white. I think it's not taught enough. Black History Month, yeah, it may go through it, but it doesn't teach it. It doesn't let them know the Black Wall Street, the struggles of what African Americans had to go through. So I don't think there should absolutely be more.
And I think that, you know, you could speak to this certainly as an educator, that I would think that this is something that needs to be taught at home. I think a lot of times teachers kind of get thrown, you know, into the ring of, hey, you're with our kids 6 hours a day. So it's on you to kind of put these concepts in their heads. How important is it that parents are also creating this environment where their kids can ask questions, their kids can be open and honest? And even if you maybe don't have the answers, you are making that environment where you're accepting others, even if they're different, instead of just not talking about it at all.
Okay, so remember now, this distant learning just occurred with the whole COVID.
Yes.
So parents weren't comfortable, you know, teaching their kids at home. This was a big shock. Like, wait a minute, I'm going to now have to teach my own child, you know, the curriculum and this and that. A curriculum and information that they may not have been taught themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone is not, you know, privy to have, you know, all the technology and, you know, different areas of where you need to research. And, you know, certainly I know everybody does have, I would hope, have access to the library, but everything, we're in a digital age now. You have to know where you need to search and how to get this information and go from there. So with that information and with, you know, the libraries and everything online and digital, it's now possible. But a lot of parents weren't comfortable teaching their kids information that, you know, the teachers, well, we have access to. There's different websites and, you know, different programs that we, you know, the district has to pay for, or the teacher themselves, you know, pay for out their pocket. So students have access. So that's, you know, that's where the kind of the divide is. You know, they give you maybe 30 days of a trial or something, but a lot of parents won't know to do that. So teaching at home, when you know, some parents haven't been taught that themselves, you know, could be difficult. When the whole COVID and the distance learning, I had to get my mask and gloves and go to, you know, my student's house and sit on the porch, you know, with them and show them how to log in and show them how to do this and maneuver and go to this website. So, because if I didn't, there is no way that I was going to be able to teach them for the next 6 to 8 weeks. So it's something that you're going to be uncomfortable, but you have to, you know, you just have to go out there and just do what you need to do, because it's all about education and learning.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Dr. Francis, thank you for giving us that perspective and certainly being able to talk from an education standpoint, but also just creating that environment at a very young age for your kids. Thank you so much for giving us your insight this morning.
And thank you for just having this whole program and having these conversations of just everybody. This is what we need to do. And I just applaud you for just taking a step forward, which is what your program is called.
Oh, wow. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Dr. Francis. I really do appreciate that.